We dive into it. I work at the Diary of a CEO. I work with Stephen Bartlett. I was hire number three and have built and scaled what was a podcast into a multifaceted worldwide brand that is now the second largest show in the world.
You see, there's a lot of people who want to work for Stephen Bartlett.
We're hiring.
This isn't Stephen Bartlett like it is now. This was Stephen Bartlett who hadn't started Dragon's Den. He hadn't written his first book yet. The Diary of a CEO had 8,000 YouTube subscribers. He's like, we're a show. We see this thing going on Netflix one day. So we're always going to treat it like that.
Does everybody need a personal brand? What is a personal brand and how do people build one?
You've got to be willing to piss off those people who are sat around it. Not even try and speak to them, like actively piss them off. You are speaking to humans at the other end of this piece of communication. So speak to a human, don't speak to the internet or the ether, like speak to people and really try and connect with them as best you can. The baton pass that happens, everyone knowing exactly what role they're doing and how they contribute to this piece of work at the end and having that responsibility on their shoulders.
It might be one that you say, you can't ask me that and we cut it out, but I'll give it a shot. Grace, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's a big honour, no pressure as well, given your background. So we always start our podcast off the same way. So who are you and what problem do you solve?
I'm Grace Andrews. I'm at The Social Climber on Instagram. People often know that and have no idea what my first name is. So I tried to cover both of them. And the problem that I solve, I think, is on a day-to-day in my ethos and my mission is getting creators to understand how to build a brand and helping brands understand how to behave like a creator. And that's sort of the mission I'm trying to solve. If we dive into it, I work at the Diary of a CEO. I work with Stephen Bartlett. I was hire number three and have built and scaled what was a podcast into a multifaceted worldwide brand that is now the second largest show in the world. So yeah, a bit of both.
Nice. Nice. So for people listening then, those problems that you tend to solve and that you solve for people like Stephen Bartlett, what are the symptoms of those problems that maybe a business or individual might be experiencing?
I think we are in an era where content is free, right? You could pick up your phone, you could record a video and you can upload it to Instagram, you can upload it to TikTok. But we've got brands that are still behaving as if that world doesn't exist. And they're still operating with super high cost, high production, high effort advertising. And I think there's a huge disconnect between what the consumer is doing and using and looking at on a daily basis, which is organic social media platforms, which is how they consume email or how they consume brand marketing versus how brands are actually communicating. And I think there's a huge frustration from the brand not seeing conversion and the creator feeling really disconnected from the brand, or the user, sorry, feeling really disconnected from the brand. I think the literal symptoms are when I see a TV advert that's high production, high polish, salesy, down your throat, being shared, copy and pasted across various different social media platforms with no iteration or no thought process of how a consumer is going to receive that sort of cold sale. I'd say that's probably one of the largest symptoms. And then I think the other way around for creators or for people trying to build following, there's a disconnect between what it means to have a following and what it means to have a business or a brand and how they can turn that into like a viable revenue generating source. And so I try and get brands to act like creators and creators to act like brands and close the gap, because I really don't think there's a big difference. At the end of the day, it's all people to people. Whether you are a creator or whether you are a business or a brand, you're trying to convert people or bring people into your ecosystem and your brand world. And I think I'm trying to, close that gap as much as I can.
I love that, the mission you're on. So if we were to take you today and put you into some of those boardrooms with some of those brands that, again, it's severely wrong, and you were to shake them and say, Mr. Brand, you're not doing X, Y, and Z, what are those things?
I think I always try and let the data lead. So my first thing would be to bring in the evidence. So I'd be going, here's what you've done for the last 12 months, and here's where I think you could be. Here are some examples of brands and business that are doing it. I think the things the big brands are missing is the people-led approach. So we're starting to see this new role emerge, which is like the founder creator or the founder personal brand social media manager, where social media managers are being hired to tell the story of the founder. And the reason they're doing that is because it goes back to the old age adage, I always get that wrong, or theory or saying that people buy from people, and people don't want to buy from a faceless brand anymore. They want to see humans and they want to build connection. I mean, all the evidence is there to say that we're in this loneliness crisis and we're lacking connection. So putting a faceless brand out there is going to really struggle, you know, at the speed we need to build connection. So I think you really need to, I would go in and I'd say, look, these are the brands that are killing it right now. Surprise, surprise, you're seeing the founder across everything. If not, you're seeing employees or you're seeing the community. You're getting faces in the content to tell the story, because what it does is build emotional connection. And emotional connection is that gold spot that's going to create conversion ultimately in your modern marketing funnel or modern marketing journey or whatever you want to call it. So I'd be saying, get your face in it. Get your story in it ultimately. That's what I mean. Your face is one thing, but you could show up and still read the script. I want to feel connected to your brand. So it's about creating these like connection touch points across everything you do. Community is a big buzzword at the moment. Everyone wants a community, and they're kind of getting a bit mixed up with following and audience and community and what it all means. And I think you've got to be adding value to create a community, and you've also got to create a place for them to belong. And I say value in terms of, it's kind of a value exchange. You've got to buy into the brand's values. So you've got to be sharing your values, but you've also got to be offering value beyond your product. So is it entertainment, education? Are you showing how to build a business? Are you like providing extra value so that when the product or whatever drops, they're going to buy into your brand no matter what, because you've built that and established that connection? So I'd be looking at bringing the emotional storytelling in, whether it's through your face or through a story or through a really killer video asset that you can like rinse and repeat in different formats. And I'd be looking at the multiple touch points of how you're speaking to a community. So what channels are you showing up on? Are you really, you know, connecting with who you want to reach? And are you thinking about what extra value you can add to your community?
When you were saying emotional connection there, my head automatically goes to a John Lewis advert making me cry. Other emotions are available. So I think we typically think of like, can you get the emotion out? But what else can that look like? Obviously, like connecting with them on one level, I imagine humor's there. Where do you see brands absolutely nailing this and bringing in different examples?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest emotions you can bring in is that sense of like fear of missing out, fear of not being part of something where everyone feels really connected and you feel like you might miss the opportunity. So you can evoke fear, you could evoke a joy, like real true belly laughing joy, you know, where you feel, I know that that brand is going to bring me, you know, joy with everything I read. The brand that comes to mind immediately is Surreal. I don't know if you've come across them. They're a cereal brand, and they actually have the absolute, I think I mentioned him in everything I ever do, but they brought on John Thornton, who was the copywriter for Innocent back in the day. And Innocent have always thought in this way of how can we, yes, be a product, a juice, a smoothie brand, or a fruit smoothie brand, but also how can we bring joy to the everyday? And that's what really comes through in their content. It comes through in their product packaging. And so John Thornton was Innocent. He's now at Surreal. And all of their content, every time I see a post, every time I see the product, they've really injected joy into it. And it makes you stop. It makes you recommend the brand beyond what it tastes like. It does taste good, but it makes you stop and share and chat with your friends and share in a WhatsApp group. And to me, that is the golden ticket to marketing, is how can you get people to do the free referral for you and spread by word of mouth? And that's what people do when they feel something. John Lewis is great. You know, you can evoke sadness. I know some brands that are building communities around the experience of grief and sharing that emotional connection. And I think there are so many ways to bring emotion into your story. And really, it's got to be based around, one, who you're trying to reach, but authentically, like true to yourself, like what is your story?
Nice. You touched on a few things there. We're massive on psychology, right? So what I sometimes think about in both a positive way and maybe in a, that's quite alarming way, is how hackable we are as consumers and how perhaps aware brands are of that, especially in a, I'm looking at my phone every 5 minutes kind of culture. What do you think about that?
I'm also a little bit obsessed with behavioral psychology. So the first thing I read that made me really understand how to work with my team was Surrounded by Idiots. And I was like, whoa, we've all got different communication styles. Like, wow, if you actually just untapped how people think, you can communicate with them in the most effective way. So for me, I find all of that world like super fascinating. I kind of see it, and this is a little bit, you can choose if you want to include this or not. Like, either it is maybe a little bit sadistic, but I think it's a superpower to be able to unlock how people think and reach them exactly at the moment where they need or perhaps are desiring your service or solution. And being able to deeply understand how behavior works so that you can unlock the need or desire for you. And I think that's pretty, and this is probably because I'm a brand marketer, but like, I think that's a superpower. And it also means that like, I want to be able to speak to exactly who I want to be able to speak to. I don't want to speak to the whole world. I want to be able to find exactly my desired consumer and speak to them and make them feel seen and make them feel heard and make them feel part of something. And yes, there are brands who are going to take advantage of that. And it's going to be used when you think about all that, you know, AI and the models that are being created and how the algorithms are set up and the learnings and data we develop on people. It can be used in a good and a bad way. And you hope that, you know, all of this falls into the hands of people who are using it for positive moves. But like, there, you know, everything is like pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be people who grasp that data and use it to their advantage. And there's probably a business in trying to solve for that, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder as well how there's also this thing of we as people see ourselves in one way, but it's probably not the absolute way that we come across. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how many brands are out there that thought they were in their perfect audience's radar. That's my audience over there. I think I'm a Gen Z product. But then actually they realize they're in the complete wrong audience. Like, how often do you see people that are trying to preach to the complete wrong audience?
All the time, every single day. I think it's one of the biggest issues I see when I start working with, I often work with the businesses that come through Dragon's Den as part of my work with Steve. And often you will see that exact issue. You'll see someone come in and go, we are a product for millennials between this age bracket, we're women. And I go, first of all, let me just look at your data. Let me look at your analytics. Who's engaged with you over the last, I don't know, 60, 90 days? Interesting, because I'm looking at male 16-year-olds who are thinking about their next career opportunity, like whatever. And I'm like, where's this disconnect happen? And I think it comes a lot of the time with founders who romanticize their idea and they become very connected to who they think they are and what they want to be, and they're not willing to pivot, which is one of the most critical things if you're an entrepreneur or a founder, leading with the data and pivoting when necessary. But it's something I call an audience gap. Like, I think it's the gap between who you think you're talking to and who you want to talk to. And probably what you need to do is like bridge that gap and also look at why it's happened. So I think the piece that often is missing in both content strategy and brand strategy is getting so wrapped up and loving and probably like leading with your heart and your ego a little bit too much and getting so wrapped up in the direction you think you want to go in and not like checking to see if you're on track and wondering how that disparity occurred as well. Like, how did we end up here? And how can we solve to end up here if that's the right direction to go in? And what research are we doing to really deeply understand this audience and their issues and their concerns and how we show up to them? And actually, do we need to pivot and look over here? But there's so much data available to you now. Like, if you're on social media, you've immediately got analytics available to you. If you're on YouTube, you've got endless data available to you. If you plug in a tool to your, you know, plug in pixels and analytics tools to your websites, you should be able to understand your user behavior. If you have an email newsletter, you get loads of data. So I think it's so important that we're not romanticizing the idea of who we want to reach and we're actually being led by data. If we've got so much of it now, as we were just saying, and brands are going to use it to hack, make sure that if you're a small business, you're also using it to your advantage in the same way. Lean into the data, lean into the evidence, and make sure that that is guiding your strategy, not your romantic idea about who you want to connect with.
But the romantic ideas feel so good. Right. So it feels like data is, I've got this analogy, and I don't think Zach likes it, but I'm going to run with it anyway. But I think of it as like a cake, okay?
Okay.
And, oh, yeah, you tried this one.
Yeah, I tried it. It didn't work, no. But today's the day that it works, Grace. And obviously, you've been a driving force for Diary of a CEO, all these other podcasts, these Dragon's Den businesses. There must be, it feels like data is your eggs. You're not baking a cake without your eggs. So what are some of the other things, tools that you will always rely on when it comes to brand marketing where you're like, this is like a non-negotiable for me?
Bit better that time.
Thanks.
So you've got your eggs, and you've got your flour. You need your flour and your sugar. I'm on. I'm with you. So I think data in terms of audience understanding is really important. So the more evidence you can build up for who's engaging and who you're trying to reach and who are they, how do they show up every day, and how can you show up in their lives, really important. But you also want to be looking forward. So we use, you know, semantic searches and keyword searches and trend analysis to understand, what are those people doing outside of connecting with our brand? Like, where else are they spending their time, and what topics are they interested in, and what's emerging and what's about to explode? So you've got things from SEMrush to exploding topics, like all these tools. Some of them have free trials you can play around with. I think you've always got to be looking forward. We're moving at such a crazy rate of technology advancement. If you think about even the way AI tools have come on in the last 6 months, thinking about where they're going to be in 12 months' time, we need to be one step ahead. So looking at the existing data and your data sets that exist, but also looking forward, mm-hmm. is really, really pivotal to dictating the direction that you need to go in next. So analysis, but also looking forward, are going to be your two best friends. And then looking at the landscape that you're operating in, I think, is really important. So understanding who else is occupying this space, like what is your market share with these different providers, what are they doing really well? And don't be afraid to, if we're thinking about content strategy here, go into those profiles and look at their last 30 days. What's worked for them? Why has it worked? What hasn't worked? What lessons can you take and build into your content? Steal like an artist, you know, like not necessarily copying and pasting. I would never endorse that. But take the learnings, like share the learnings. It's all available. It's all visible to you. Why did that piece of content overperform? Why did they manage to convert that many people in that email or that sale? What can I dissect from this? People do it all the time to us at the Diary of a CEO. They try and discover or uncover the blueprint that's led us to where we are. And don't get me wrong, it's quite funny to read in hindsight because a lot of the time you're making up as you go along. But there are elements to it where I go, yeah, they've nailed that. They've really uncovered exactly why we did make that decision at that point, and why our trajectory changed in terms of our guest strategy, or why we started using this form of thumbnail, or why we removed the microphones from the set, all these little things. And they go, yeah, that is why we did that, because we learned from that and we made that change and we were trying to speak to this audience member. So there are ways to dissect what other people are doing as well, which I think can really help you stay one step ahead and inform what's coming next.
And then I was listening to the Hormozy episode recently.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Zach about this, but the pattern recognition. So for people that are trying to, I've got a feeling that sometimes people need to learn the lessons themselves, yeah, rather than jumping ahead, because actually you jump ahead and then all of a sudden you've got nothing, or you've analyzed it wrong and you've kind of ran before you could walk. So for the people that are listening that are the one or two or three man businesses that are getting up and running and trying to steal Diary of a CEO, or they're trying to steal kind of Perfect Ted, whatever it is, what advice would you give to those kind of early stage starters?
I think you've got to, there's an element of paying attention to what's going on around you, but you've got to be driven by your why. So you've got to rigidly, and I'm not saying stay in your lane, but stay focused, like really, really focused on what you are trying to achieve. And be informed by what's going on around you. Like, you can't stick your head in the sand and be like, we're so focused, we're not paying attention to everyone else. Have an awareness and have an understanding of what's going on, but you've got to follow what your data is leading you to and the mission you're on. I think it's very, very hard to build a successful business if you don't deeply understand your why. Like, you've got to be driven, whether it's a mission or a vision or just a reason for doing it. I've literally just come from meeting two founders, and they're building a really interesting electrolyte brand. And I said, like, why? I said, I understand your brand. I said, it's aesthetically, you're killing it. You've obviously both deeply understand how to use content and socials, and I think they're going to be incredibly successful. But I said, I don't know your why. I don't feel your why. I don't, and that the why is what connects you to an audience. Like, I'll look at it, think it's amazing, maybe share it, but I'm not going to necessarily buy the product unless I feel connected to their mission and their reason for doing it. I need their values. I want to know their why. Like, why are you doing it? I want to dive in. And your why is what separates you from everyone else. Because ultimately, if you're an electrolyte brand, yes, you can like play around with the product mix and you can make it look a bit different, but you're in a category in the same way there are lots of categories and some are more saturated than others. Your why is your true differentiating factor. Your why is going to be different from everyone else's. Like, our absolute unique superpower is that we're all individual humans. So how can we communicate that through the product? Because that's going to be your differentiating factor. So I think it's like paying attention to what's going on. And of course, like, you've got to learn the mistakes for yourself because that's where they really stick. But there are definitely learnings you can take from what's going on in the landscape around you. And then it's a case of really sticking to why you're doing this and not altering from that. You've got to be anchored in your why, and every decision has got to come off that, because there are going to be things other brands do that are going to try and distract you. Other industries, other people, other trends, things that are happening. And I say this all the time to my team, because trends come about all the time, but not every trend is relevant to your brand, right? I get asked this a lot as well. Everyone's like, "What? How do I know which trends to jump on? And how do I know if that's going to help my brand or not?" And I say, well, get the trend, bring it about and go, can I make this make sense for my why? Does it relate? Is it anchored in what we're trying to do? If not, not for you. And that's okay. You don't have to jump on every trend to be successful. Like, oh my goodness, you would be constantly chasing and you would never see the light of day. So yeah, does that answer your question?
It was a beautiful answer.
Yeah, beautifully. I'm sure you're sick of answering the next one. I'd be silly to not ask it. Obviously, there's a lot of people who want to work for Stephen Bartlett.
We're hiring.
So for you, how did you do it? What advice can you give?
I think one of the key reasons I was able to secure the job quite early on, I was 24 when I started working with Steve, and he put a job post out on LinkedIn, and it wasn't like a formal job post. It was very much a post written out on LinkedIn. I'm hiring. I want a social media manager. He was very early to this concept of personal branding. I actually don't think it was even a term at that point. It was kind of brand building or personal social media. And the reason I was able to get in front of him on top of the, or above the thousands of applications, is because I'd already built my digital evidence. So I was already building a portfolio through the Social Climber. And it was what I consider my digital evidence, my digital CB, that meant I could send a link and go, look, here's what I do. Do you like it? If you like it, let's work together. So I didn't have to do much convincing. I didn't have to write a cover letter. I didn't have to share my CV because I go, here's my evidence. It's kind of in the same way designers have always created portfolios. And so I'd been building and curating my brand, which I was using for lead generation as a freelancer, sharing educational content, sharing super high value trend driven analysis, sharing content breakdown, sharing brand breakdowns. So I had evidence that I knew what I was talking about, and I could back myself in that process. So I connected with Steve over LinkedIn. 2 weeks later, I was in the office. And I also think it's worth saying, like, this isn't Stephen Bartlett like it is now. This was Stephen Bartlett who hadn't started Dragon's Den. He hadn't written his first book yet. The Diary of a CEO had 8,000 YouTube subscribers. It wasn't even the top 50 in the UK. He wasn't a household name as he is now in the UK. And so I took, I hedged a bet as well. I saw an opportunity to learn. I was super young, super naive. I thought, he kind of knows about social media. He's built this social media thing. He's moved on to this next thing. I'm going to learn so much from being in this environment. So I kind of took a little bit of a bet, but used my evidence to get there and said yes to an opportunity. And I think it's funny because now everyone, I dream to work with Stephen Bartlett. It's amazing. And don't get me wrong, everything we've created together has been incredible. And it's been the best fast-tracking learning journey of my entire life, probably. But I did also take a risk. Mm. Like, I took a little bit of a bet on something that I thought, based on evidence, was probably going to do well. And I think people aren't necessarily willing to like find and discover and take that risk. They all want in now. But actually, I would say in many ways, we've had some of the best years in that build stage. And don't get me wrong, it's going on to be this incredible new iteration of where we're going. But I think you've got to be willing to take that risk initially. But I would say hiring now, I have a bias towards people who have evidence through their social media platforms in terms of their personal brand, because it makes my life so much easier. Mm. It makes the interview process so much easier. I have the evidence, the existing evidence, to show that you care about this industry beyond just wanting to work with Stephen Bartlett. And I would say building my personal brand, or what I thought was my digital portfolio at that time, was what gave me the edge in terms of getting in and being seen and becoming more visible at that moment.
Nice. I imagine the intrinsic belief came across as well of, I am just who I say I am. I've been doing it. I've got a factory floor full of evidence. So I'm going to ask you to leave your humility at the door for a moment. If Stephen was sat with us now and we said to him, what has Grace done for you that you couldn't have done yourself?
Oh, God.
Well, what would he say?
I'm trying to think what he would actually say. I think what he values, and he voices is often very good at sort of highlighting people's strengths and bringing people's strengths together. I think it's one of his superpowers. I think he really values that I'm willing to tell him when I disagree with him. And I think that's what I also look for when I'm trying to hire within my team as well. I don't want to be surrounded by yes men. I want people with different opinions, different thought processes, different backgrounds, and they're willing to say to me, I think this would be better if we tried this because X, Y, Z. I always say to my team, we can do anything. Truly, sky's the limit. We have no red tape in this business. Just give me a bit of evidence or tell me why, and then we'll run with it. Like, I just need that ounce of understanding of there's some sort of thought process behind it, rather than this brand just did this really cool thing, let's do it. Why does it matter to us? Cool, let's go run with it. And so I think he places a lot of value in the fact that I'm willing to have difficult conversations with him. And don't get me wrong, sometimes they don't sound as eloquent as I'm making them out to be. Sometimes it's, you know, back and forth, and we're butting heads a little bit, but we get to a really like beautiful conclusion because we've had like creative and data-led disagreement, I guess, that brings us to a really nice place. And I think he would say, I'm like I will go and make it happen as well. So if there's something that needs to happen, like, I will find a way, hell or high water. I will find a solution. Like, I'm a very solution-driven person. So we're going to figure out how to do this extraordinary influencer campaign next week with no budget. And we're going to get 90% of the influencers to open that. Like, that's a real life scenario. Like, I could list and list and list the scenarios. So I think that's probably, I'm trying to think if that's fair. He'll probably watch this. So I'm like, it's a fair representation of what he'd say.
You did well. You still sound humble as well. I don't know how you did it.
Some of the, it's only with hindsight, as we know that the hindsight bias is beautiful. It's only with hindsight that we can actually look back and think about some of the lessons. So if you were going back to early Grace, who was taking that kind of that risk and thinking there, what have been some of the biggest lessons that you've learnt in business and marketing throughout your time so far?
God, that's a huge question.
Sorry.
I'm like, where do I start?
Better than the cake one.
I mean, I posted on LinkedIn today because I've just celebrated 4 years and going into year five, and I was trying to really reflect on the lessons I've learned. I think really understanding that content, brand, marketing, B2B, D2C, all these acronyms, like, you are speaking to humans at the other end of this piece of communication. So speak to a human, don't speak to the internet or the ether, like, speak to people and really try and connect with them as best you can. I think the second thing is, in terms of brand, content and marketing, oh God, there are so many things. I think we've spoken about emotional connection. We've spoken about community. I think people underestimate how many times you've got to repeat your message before people are going to buy in. I think I see that quite a lot at the moment. People think produce one message one time, it didn't perform well, okay, next thing. Whereas the reality is, like, if you go back to all the traditional marketing forms, if, like, you've got to hit 7 points or, like, 7 touch points of marketing, you really do have to repeat your message so much in this day and age, because we are consuming so much content that once, I'm not even going to see it. Twice, there might be something in my subconscious that happens, but 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times across multiple different touch points on different platforms, it's actually going to start to produce some stickiness with me. And that's what we're trying to create. We're trying to create stickiness between the person you want to buy or invest or become a customer of yours and what the message is you're trying to put out. So I think repetition, adding more value than you can possibly even think. We've managed to create sellout products, number one shows. We've really, like, mastered this blueprint of how to get people to buy into our brand. And the reality is, all of the work happened about a year before we released that product. It was the investment into really adding genuine value to these people, so that truly, I'm not going to say no matter what we launched, because I'm sure there are things people wouldn't buy into, but as long as it spoke to their problems and tried to solve for them, they were probably going to buy it anyway, because we'd given so much free value in terms of education, inspiration, aspirational content, bringing people together, offline events, all of this for free, that if we bought something out that had a price tag on, best believe it was going to be 10 times the amount of value you were getting for free. So I guess in terms of sales or small businesses, I might look like a lead gen tool, or maybe you produce a piece of education or you insight that is free, that so that by the time the product comes, whether it's a course or whatever it might be, a sale, a tech product, you've given enough insight and education to that person that they do want to invest into the paid version. So I think there are some top things. I mean, one of the things that has helped us probably the most is with everything we do, we always produce waitlists. And waitlist will always, always encourage that sense of urgency, exclusivity, and FOMO. And it's probably one of the things we suggest almost always to anyone releasing anything, is like, drive hype and excitement through a waitlist. You're also gathering data during that time, and you're understanding and you're proving test of concept during that time. I guess the other thing, I mean, I could go on and on and on, so just stop me.
You've got the time. Keep going.
test. Like, experiment, test. Like, it is the only way to succeed in 2025 and beyond. The platforms are changing so often. The technology we're using is changing. The trends are changing. The consumer behaviors are changing. So ensuring you are constantly testing what you're putting out there. And even test everything. Test the product you're trying to release before it comes out. Use Facebook ads. Put £10 behind a few iterations of what you're thinking about and see what people click through on the most. You don't need to, it doesn't need to be at great expense. You can reach different localized markets. You could maybe test your product going to South Africa before you release it in South Africa, see if there's appetite over there. If there's not, iterate, change, try again. So we're not going in blind. Like, that's what I think blows my mind the most, is that people still go in and cross their fingers on things when we've got so much data and insight and testing ability at our fingertips. I mean, even when it comes down to media, like with all of our YouTube shows, there is now a built-in platform within YouTube to A-B test your thumbnails. Mm. We do a lot of testing before it even gets to that stage. But if you're not using the tools that are there to help and serve you in order to optimize your content, you're always going to be on the back foot. So I think test, optimize, learn at every opportunity you possibly can. And if that looks like, you know, producing the same piece of content, it doesn't perform well, taking it off, playing around with the hook, putting it back. Does that perform better? Or actually, maybe it's the cover photo. Let's test that. And constantly trying to iterate on your process is where you're going to find the edge. Like this 1% mentality, this slight edge mentality, whatever you want to call it. There are so many different versions, but it's all about finding the little detail that's going to produce the biggest possible outcome. And we do that within our marketing, our product, our brand, our content every single day. So we might put out a TikTok, it might not perform very well. We'll take it down. We'll try and figure out the learnings. We'll put up a new version. We'll repackage it. We'll re-put it until we find what worked. We're not willing to just sit back and be like, oh, that one didn't work. Next thing, you know, it's not in our nature. And I think that's what's given us that ability to be at the forefront of what we're doing, because we're constantly trying to play into the the platforms and the algorithms and learn as well, because it's so easy to get left behind right now. You have to be constantly figuring and testing and playing within the tools to stay one step ahead. So I think there's loads of things. I mean, ultimately, also, I think all brands should be looking to be media brands in 2025. Like, what is your content stream? What is your media stream? Whether you are a media company or not, you need to have series and content and be led by content. It's free. And really, you need to be a media brand that happens to sell something else, I think is going to be the biggest unlock to brand, real like legacy brand build. If you look at the brands like, even look at like Instagram itself, is like a tech company who put media at the forefront of what they're doing in order to, you know, with like Adam Mosseri, the head of Instagram, he comes on and creates media to inform about the updates. What previously would have been an email or maybe a blog post, or it would have just happened. They now lead with media and are essentially a media brand that then tells you about the technology. Or look at, you know, Red Bull or Perfect Ted or all of these companies. They sell energy drinks or they sell a product, but you might know them because of the content they create. Mm-hmm. And again, you're showing up in people's spaces where they spend a lot of time, but you're also occupying a space in their brain and you're creating that brand connection so that when you see it in the shop, you're going to lean into their product over someone else's.
An amazing answer. Thank you.
I think we just went round and round, but then I could keep going and keep going.
Well, you've alluded to a few of the things there. I think that, and you mentioned the word blueprint, which I think is quite interesting. And I know that a lot of people watching this will either be podcast producers and they run their own podcast, so it's probably a selfish question as well, or they'll just be fans and absolutely fascinated with The Diary of a CEO, which has taken the world by storm. What are some of the high level things, from thumbnails, trailers, what are some of the things that have got it to the place that it is today?
I don't think I could pinpoint one thing that's led to the success of The Diary of a CEO. I think it's our mentality to experiment and our ethos and our like deep obsession with sweating the small stuff. And that comes across in everything we do. So yes, we were very early to discovering trailers for podcasts, but that's because we've always seen The Diary of a CEO as a show. And we never really looked at, you know, we were a group of three of us who'd never produced a podcast before. So we didn't know what was right and what was wrong. We knew that if we wanted, you know, if we think about instinctual behaviors, like we knew we wanted people to consume this thing. If you wanted people to consume a movie, you produce a trailer. So that was kind of how we went in. And I think naivety is a superpower, but that's a separate topic. I think we've been deeply obsessed with content and communicating content in the best way we possibly can. So we brought in experts in video editing and brand and marketing and social media to communicate our message as best we could in ways that would make sense as if we were a product or a brand. We didn't stick in a lane that said, you're a podcast, so you have to do it this way. We thought, we've got an end goal here where we want to drive people to this thing. Let's use our, you know, let's use all the knowledge we have to convert customers into buying a product, which is investing their time, our most valuable asset, into consuming our content. So we base a lot of our development of that marketing funnel in first principles, like the first principles of human behavior. How do you get someone to watch something? So we didn't follow a rule book or a playbook. And I think that trying to blueprint what we created would almost be holding own other shows back from discovering their opportunities and their success, because I don't think you can ever like word for word replicate something. And we've discovered even with building our new shows. So we're now a media company and we build multiple shows for Davina McCall, Paul Brunson, and we've got three more in the pipeline for the next quarter. And we thought, oh, we can blueprint The Diary of a CEO. And actually, they need their own individual strategies. They're different people we're speaking to, different audiences, and you wouldn't replicate and blueprint a brand and then rinse and repeat when you're trying to reach completely different people. So they're all getting their own sort of spin or touch on what we know to work. But ultimately, I think we double down on content. We sweat every detail to the point where most people would think we're like completely insane, from the scent when you walk in to the music that's playing to the baton pass that happens everyone knowing exactly what role they're doing and how they contribute to this piece of work at the end, and having that responsibility on their shoulders, and really just caring more than we knew that what we could do to differentiate ourselves was care more than any other team in the world. So we were like, if we care more than anyone else, we're probably going to be all right. In terms of actual specific things, getting people to watch your thing is hard, especially because the podcast platforms themselves, the audio platforms, they're getting better, but they don't have a huge amount of discoverability within the platform. So how do you get people to discover your thing? One, word of mouth, not really something you can hugely control at the beginning. So how do you get in front of people? And it's the same with anything. Imagine if you had a product that you were launching, your podcast is your product. How do you get in front of people? So do you show up? How do you show up in their daily routines and their daily behaviors? You can occupy real estate on the feeds. The easiest way to do it is to film the thing and get it on social media. It's free. So we've always sort of taken the visual first approach. We've always seen it as a show, and having that video and that element of visual means you can show up on different platforms that do enable discoverability. So Instagram, TikTok, they have algorithms to push you in front of certain audiences. And then you've got to think about funneling people through from social media through to your piece of content. I mean, it's a funny one because we've never called the Diary of a CEO a podcast, because we've always seen it as a video first format. And there was this like phase where people called them vodcasts and all of these things. But we've just been like, we're a show. We see this thing going on Netflix one day, so we're always going to treat it like that. Mm. It's how we were able to get onto airlines before anyone else. It's how we were able to go onto BBC iPlayer and all these different distribution platforms. And I do think it all comes back down to that mindset of, we're going to do this our way and not the blueprinted way. And try and find the opportunity through first principles to sell this product and find the audience. And it's like so many different values and principles. It's like the 1% mindset, that slight edge theory, the Jeff Olson theory, and it's experimentation and those two things coming together. And we're constantly iterating. We're trying newsletters now. We are really trying to evolve our trailers and actually think about teasers and think about photo first content, and how can we maximize the guest's journey with us, and how can we encourage them to share more. And we're really thinking about every step of the journey, and I am hesitant to say like, these are the three things you've got to do to produce a successful show, because I do think it's going to be different for every show and every podcast out there. And I would really lean away from trying to do it the way everyone else has done it, because that's where you just become like one of many.
Mm-hmm.
I think obviously there are like good practices, like make sure you've got decent audio and it's nice to listen to, and you're filming it, even if it's, you know, you've got a lovely setup here. But if you're at the very start, grab your iPhone, grab a phone, grab some mics from Amazon. You can do the whole setup for less than £100. Well, not the iPhone, but you know, once you've invested in that, assuming you've already got that, and you can get going. But like, it's those basic understanding of, I want eyeballs on this thing, I therefore need to film it, I therefore need to turn that into content and create a funnel to drive to that end goal, which is the show. I just think people overcomplicate these things. This has made it sound really complicated. But like, it's not complicated. It's like, it's all product to people. How do you get eyeballs on your thing to drive to the product? Whatever it is, podcast, show, hydration brand, glasses, micro, whatever it is, like, it's the same principles at its core. And I think that's what's always I think that's what's allowed us to be so successful, is because we didn't have podcast expertise in the team, so we were never like walled in or narrowed down to what success could look like.
Our book is out now. Sales is Therapy is available everywhere for people who are looking to get better at communicating,
asking better questions, closing more deals, and bringing in more clients.
Beware, it is not for the faint of heart or for closed-minded people.
You can buy it in all good shops. Links below.
we've kind of led on quite nicely in terms of maybe alienating. You spoke about it a bit, but speaking to the right audience and actually alienating and being kind of stuck in your ways and being like, actually, we're not for you, disrupting the market and saying, actually, we only want to talk to these people. And we probably want to kind of like rustle some feathers over there. What's your take on that?
I think you've got to know who you're trying to speak to. And the clearer vision you can have on that exact person, the better your communication to them is going to be. The worst thing you can be is wishy-washy trying to speak to everyone all at once, because you are not going to speak to anyone. I always come back to Jane Werwind, who's the founder of Dermalogica. And she said, if you want to be a successful brand, you've got to piss off 80% to be able to reach the 20%. And I think about that quote probably every single day. It's like ingrained in my soul. And it's so true. You are never going to please everyone. And you should not be trying to, because the worst place to be is sat on that fence. People don't like you. They don't talk about you. They don't care about you. You have got to know who you're going after. And you've got to be willing to piss off those people who are sat around it. Not even not try and speak to them, like actively piss them off, because that is where you're going to get those 20% who are like magnets towards you and who genuinely light up and care and are going to advocate for you offline and going to tell their friends in their WhatsApp group about you. And that's where you start to build that like cult following who live and breathe and die by your brand, because they know you're willing to go the extra mile for them. And it feels, again, we come back to emotional connection. They feel hugely connected to your brand in a way where they know that you're willing to disrupt or disagree with people in the way that therefore brings them to the forefront, whoever that those people are and whoever that community is. And I would like, I think when people talk about, oh, that industry's so saturated, I can't go into that industry, I'm like, there is so much opportunity still probably in every single industry. We see new brands emerge every day. I think of Refi and Rode, who are beauty brands. We've had beauty brands existing. Think of like L'Oreal and Estee Lauder, these like legacy brands or companies, and brands are coming in and still disrupting what is a hugely saturated space because they're thinking about it differently and they're speaking very specifically to a certain consumer or a certain customer or a certain audience. And they're not winning and not trying to please and reach everyone. And I would suggest that has got to be the way to go when we are overwhelmed with content and noise every day. Like, you've got to know exactly who you're going after and try and speak to them and show up in their life in the best way you can, like every single day.
Good. Great answer. And then I want to talk to you about personal branding. Yeah. As you said that a few years ago, it probably wasn't a word. I think it might end up in the dictionary in the next few years. Me and Zach, as business owners, we post on LinkedIn every day, sometimes 37 times a day, and we get banned and all wonderful things. But does everybody need a personal brand? What is a personal brand and how do people build one?
Again, with a big question.
Sorry.
Okay, so what is a personal brand? It's a really funny term that's developed sort of a cringy ickiness to it. I would be honest and say, like, a lot of people come to me and they're like, oh, personal brand. Like, I don't want a personal brand, but I do want X, Y, and Z. For me, a personal brand is your digital reputation. So we all exist in this room. How can I extend this conversation? How can I reach more people? How can I grow global reach and global audiences? Like, extending my point of view online, extending my personality online so that I can expand my reach. I think the bit that people really miss in personal branding is the brand element. So everyone is willing to share every story under the sun online and talk about their dog and their cat and their kids, but there's lacking intention behind why they're doing it. So I see a lot of noise. LinkedIn is probably the main platform where people think about personal branding, but it exists on all platforms. But I see a lot of noise and I'm thinking, why? Like, why are you doing that? Where are you going with that? What's your intention? So my personal brand exists because I want to become an authority in my industry. I want to have inbound opportunities coming my way in terms of speaking, speaking on stages, keynotes, panels. I really enjoy it. It's where I develop my understanding. It's where I build my authority. And so my content is driven to establish that authority in this industry to lead me to opportunities. I'm not playing around on these platforms. I'm there for a reason. You know, I'm there to achieve X, Y, and Z. And anyone who's just like sitting in this fluff and this noise without that clear intention, it confuses me because you've understood personal, but you've missed personal brand, which means it needs a mission or an intention at the very least, if not a cohesive identity of how you show up on multiple platforms. So I think personal branding gets a weird, bad rep, but why would you not, if you were trying to establish yourself in an industry, reach potentially millions of people beyond the 10 you could reach today in this room? So for me, it's an extension of it's your digital reputation, and it's an extension of your personality online. You do not need to show up as the full Grace online. You can pick and choose the parts of who you want to be and double down with a very clear intention of how you're going to measure success. For me, that's what personal branding is. It's showing up in a place where you can lead to the opportunity you want to go. So maybe you're a founder and you're trying to build greater brand awareness for your story that will enable you to connect with retailers that allow your product to go on those shelves. We've seen that happen time and time again with Dragon's Den brands. They've connected with retailers because they posted about themselves or their story or their brand mission through their personal brand online, and that's enabled the connection to a retailer, which would have maybe taken 24 months to build the really long, winded way without that people-to-people emotional connection. And I think it opens doors and opportunities that wouldn't otherwise be available to you. There is no way in this world I would have ever come across, I mean, never say never, but I wouldn't have come across Stephen Bartlett in the way I did if my personal brand didn't exist. So it's opportunity opening doors. That's how I see it. Instead of physically going and have to knock on the Manchester office of where Stephen Bartlett lives, where he gets 500 people a day turning up to, knock on his door, and it's overwhelming and everyone looks and sounds the same and you can't differentiate between anyone. I was able to sort of gently knock open the door because of the existence of my personal brand. So for me, that's what it's done. It's opened doors, it's created opportunities, it's allowed me to get to where I want to be faster and sooner and build and expand my reach. How do people go about building one? I think you need to have that goal might change. So my goal might change when actually I don't want to speak on stages anymore. I want to write a book. And so my intention and my strategy might change because I might want to really hone in on the topics of the book so that when the book comes out, people want to buy them because I've attracted that sort of audience. But you've got to know where you're trying to get to. You've got to have an understanding when you show up on these platforms each day, because it's your checkpoint. When you show up and write something, am I edging myself closer to that goal? No. Okay, this content is not right. It comes back to the conversation around trends. Is this trend relevant for where I'm trying to go, my mission, my why? No. Okay, let's ditch it. Of course, there are going to be moments where you've got to build warmth and you've got to build emotional connection. That is edging closer to your goal, perhaps, if you're trying to build connection with people. But you've got to understand where you're going and why you're doing it, because otherwise, what's the point? Like, truly, what is the point? I see so much noise and fluff and waffle on LinkedIn. And I just think, do you know what you're doing this for? Because I think you're just trying to copy what everyone else is doing. And I think there's so much space still. People like these platforms are saturated. I hate that word, because there is so much opportunity if you just understand why you're doing it. And that will speak so loudly. It will come through in everything you do. So if I was starting from scratch and there are loads of people in my team who are wanting to build their brands and we talk about it a lot, I would look at where you're trying to go. So let's just say you're trying to build authority in your niche. I would choose 2 to 3 topics and choose 1 to 2 platforms to start with. So you might try and show up on LinkedIn and Instagram once a week for 3 months. Whatever you can do consistently. Consistency is the key word. What can you do consistently? If you have all the time in the world and you can show up on YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, Snap, like all of these newsletters, Substack, all of these things, go for it. But often I meet founders who are very, very busy and they don't have much time, but they are trying to build that connection. So I'll say, who are you trying to reach? Why are you trying to do it? And what's your goal? Cool. We understand that you're trying to build authority in your niche. Great. I would suggest who you're trying to reach, we should go on LinkedIn and actually maybe TikTok, because it's a whatever type of audience, it's a product, whatever. And we would find 2 to 3 topics that you're going to cover, and that's going to be your thing. I want to know in one statement who you are and what you're going to do and how you're going to show up. So I know we started this, it's like, what problems are you solving? I think that's a great place to start. What problems are you solving? How are you going to show up? And why are you going to show up? We're going to find those sort of topics, and you're going to post, once a week on these platforms for 3 months. Then what we're going to do is see what's working. What's worked? What hasn't worked? How can we tweak? How can we iterate? Can we up the volume? Can we change the type of post we're doing? Should we be looking at video? Should we be looking at photos? But the biggest barrier to entry is always starting. So once you've started to make a bit of noise and started splashing around and playing around and understanding the tools, then everything becomes so much easier. I think the biggest fear I often see is people just needing to get going. And actually, you'll realize that you post 5 times and 10 people like in total all of your posts. But that's fine because you've started. And the biggest fear is always just starting. And like with everything in life, consistency like has a compounding effect. So once you get going and you build, you know, your first post reaches 5 people, second post might reach 10. Third one, suddenly we're in 50. And that's, you know, that's the power of compounding consistency, is it's going to get better over time, but it's not if you don't just get going. So I'd be looking at your why and your what. Then you transition that into your how. What platforms, how am I going to show up, and how do I want to be perceived by people? And then you just want to start. And then it's a case of looking at your analytics, looking at your success against the goal you've set, however you're going to measure that. So for me, it's how many inbound speaking events have I had? How many inbound podcast event inquiries have I had? How many new connections within my sort of industry have I built? Okay, cool. That's going quite well. Let's keep doing more of that. Actually, haven't been super successful on that. And that's what the brand part is, right? The brand part is you're reflecting, you're analyzing, you're understanding if you're steering yourself nearer or further away from your goal. And that's a piece I really see lacking for a lot of people.
What about the finding the voice piece? How do people do that?
A practice, playing around, like having the freedom to try new things and not build up too much fear around it. What's the worst that's going to happen? People are going to scroll past. You know, it's as long as, you know, you're not saying anything that's damaging or detrimental. If you're playing around and you're learning who you are, I think it's got to be an extension of your personality. So, you know, I'm a 27-year-old Gen Z girl who could speak for Britain. So my LinkedIn is chatty, it's conversational. I bring that sort of personality through, and I don't abide by the strict laws of how you've got to write on LinkedIn, which is one line at a time, and it's got to be no longer than this many words on this many lines, otherwise you're going to lose people's attention. My LinkedIn is like a fair extension of my parts of my diary. Like, I use it as a online platform to have really chatty personal conversations with people about brand and the things that I talk about every day, about content deep dives. And I just heard this on this podcast and I can't believe people are talking about XYZ. And people have come to learn that that's how I show up on the platform and they feel really connected to me. Did it start like that? No. Was I very serious in my tone of voice to start with? And, you know, I've got to be a real authority in this space, so people are going to listen to me if I use, you know, very specific tone of voice. I now use like 100 exclamation marks. Like, you'll see emojis. It's very playful and it's very reflective of, I think, who I am when you meet me in person. But that develops over time. And I think that's the same with brand tone of voice as well. You're going with how you think you're going to be. And actually, over time, you really develop how best to speak to people, how they return in conversation, and how you show up. And I think it evolves. But don't try and be someone necessarily. You might try and be who you're trying to, you know, aspirationally be, but I think it's got to be an extension of who you are.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on people trying to sell the formula? Let's take LinkedIn, for example. So there's a, right, Monday you do the founder story. Yeah. Tuesday you do the funny post, like it becomes this recipe.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on people trying to kind of sell that as the silver bullet?
What's the polite way of saying this? I think be wary. I think be wary of a formula for success. The only formula for success on social media and content is consistency and experimentation. The combination of those two things. You've got to be consistently showing up and consistently experimenting. And what works for you is not going to work for me because we have different goals. So if your goal is, as I said, to sell a product or to create leads for your company or to build brand awareness, your strategy, your content pillars is going to look very different from someone who's trying to find an opportunity in a new industry for the first time. You're going to be showing up in different ways. There's not one way fits all when it comes to personal branding, when it comes to brand in general. you've got to figure out what works for you. And you can take little learnings from other people and you can see what's performing well, but you've got to make it fit you, your personality and your goal. And ultimately, if you're buying a formula or a blueprint that worked for someone over here, one, it might be out of date because the platforms are changing so often. You have to be in the weeds to figure out what's working. And two, what worked for someone else is probably not going to necessarily work for you. So my advice with the courses, although I know there are so many out there, is be wary, because the only way we've seen success, both with Steve's brand, with my brand, with all the brands we work with, is consistent experimentation over a long period of time.
I love that. Doing the obvious thing for an extraordinary amount of time without convincing yourself. So Grace, I've been hitting you with some big open questions. I'm going to keep it. Yeah, it's not going to be too big. We're coming to the end of the conversation. I guess if we were to ferry you away onto an island and you could only take books and one episode of the Diary of a CEO podcast, what episode would you take and what books are you taking with you?
The podcast is the Diary of a CEO is really easy for me. My favorite episode has always been Whitney Wolf Heard. She is the founder and CEO of Bumble. Funny enough, like in the last 2 weeks, I actually returned to Bumble after leaving and selling and IPOing and all of that wonderful stuff. She is the, I don't know if she still is, she was at the time the youngest self-made female billionaire. The most humble, but you think I'm humble. Like, imagine like a beautiful, successful woman walking into the room, a billionaire, and acting as if she was just one of you, you know, one of many. And her humility was so inspiring to me. But her story, I'd actually listened to before I started working with Stephen Bartlett on another podcast. She was at a very different stage of her business. And it's actually what inspired me to get going in that world in the first place. The way she thought about content and brand and bootstrapping your business, and the way she understood that she had to reach a certain audience. So she literally walked into universities and made people wear t-shirts to create FOMO. And just the way she thought about behavioral psychology really inspired me. So that was a really full circle moment. It's actually the only guest I've ever asked for a photo with, and the only guest I've been completely speechless with. So for me, I think it's a wonderful story for anyone, you know, looking for some inspiration and motivation. But I also personally, I have an affiliation with that one. So I could listen to it over and over again, but there are so many, but I will leave it there. Book wise, I think I already mentioned Surrounded by Idiots. I think if you are looking for that introductory level of how to communicate to people, I think it works on both a personal level, a brand level, relationships, work relationships. It just unlocked something in for me. It unlocked something in me that made me understand. It almost was like, it will make sense. I now know how to be a better leader. I now know how to communicate better to my audience in this brand, in this brand, in this brand. And I think it's a really good entry point. I also, what can I say to you?
You can take as many as you want.
Okay, don't say that. one of the first founder books I read was Phil Knight's Shoe Dog, founder of Nike. And I think it was my first sort of understanding of, he built an industry around running when running wasn't what it is today. Everyone was like, who goes running for fun? Like, he would go on jogs and built footwear and apparel to enable his jogs and jogging. And people were like, where are you running to? Why are you running away from things? Like, running wasn't what it is today. And he had this like real gut feeling and like wasn't willing to waver to everyone telling him no, like even these really successful people. And when he ran out of money, and he was just going to go for it like hell or high water. And I thought that's what it really takes to be a successful entrepreneur. Like, when everyone, all these successful people are telling you your idea is stupid, this isn't even an industry, like who's going to go for a run? And then, you know, look at Nike today. I think I'm like, yeah, you know, he knows what he's doing. So that's one of my favorite books. I actually dip into that quite a lot. He has an amazing, there's some amazing quotes and sound bites in it. And he talks about his advice for people in their 20s is to find a calling, not a career. And I feel that really resonated with me. So, yeah.
Nice. Grace, thank you so much for joining us. An amazing conversation. If people want to check you out, if they're not already connected with you, where can they find you?
So creepy, isn't it? Like, I don't want people to check
me. Don't check me out. Don't find me. Watch the video. Go to bed.
No. I'm the.socialclimber on Instagram and just Grace Andrews on LinkedIn.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much.